officials, welcome back. I hope that you enjoyed your lunch. What I'm going to do now is to give the platform to the acting national commissioner, who will open first and introduce the presenters from his department.
Honourable Chairperson, Members of Parliament, good afternoon. Today we are here to do this presentation to yourselves, and I'm here with the team of Correctional Services led by Chief Deputy Commissioner. I would like to introduce them to you. On your right hand, Chairperson, the lady there is Ms. Nandi Mareka. She is our acting Chief Financial Officer. Next to her is Mr. Terence Raseroga. Terence is the acting Chief Director in Strategic Management. With me also are other Chief Deputy Commissioners. Starting from my left hand side is Mr. Tiboho Mukwena, who is responsible for human resources in the department. Next to him is Ms. Greta Rothman, who is responsible for remand. Next to her, Ms. Kumla Matibela, who is responsible for community corrections. Next to her, standing in for Mr. James Smallberger, is Dr. Joey Kutse, who is acting as the Chief Deputy Commissioner responsible for incarceration and corrections. And next to him, Ms. Ntabiseng Mosupia, who is responsible for GDO in the Department of Correctional Services. We also are accompanied by two colleagues, Mr. Pico Mbambo, who is the Chief Director in Intergovernmental Relations, and Mr. Omavale, who is responsible for operations in the Office of the Chief Operating Officer. It is indeed our pleasure to present to this August committee the Department of Correctional Services Strategic Plan and Annual Performance Plan. Our plans are in line with the clear mandate of the current administration that endeavors to ensure for the next 5 years we build towards achieving the objectives of the National Development Plan Vision 2030. We had an interaction with our Minister, Deputy Minister Mani, with regard to this presentation. And it was clear during that discussion that there were concerns that later Mr. Rasoro will indicate how we will incorporate them into the annual performance plan of correctional services. Our key mandate remains the rehabilitation of those entrusted in our care and to ensure that they are properly integrated back into society as responsible and law-abiding citizens who would add value to the development of this country. We are, therefore, committed to various programs achieved on this important mandate. We are appealing to the portfolio committee to closely monitor and guide us in our activities as we roll out these plans. We do value the oversight role of the committee, and it is for us very important that we are kept at our toes all the time. As I indicated earlier, I am acting in this position. It is the intention of Minister Masuta and Deputy Minister Makweta that this position and others that are important shall be filled forthwith, and the process of ensuring that appointments are done are already in the office of the Minister. We are looking forward to a good and working relationship with the committee and all in the interest of making South Africans to feel and be safe. I'm going to request Mr. Raseroga to start with the annual performance plan, whereafter Ms. Mareka shall do for the budget allocation of the department. Chairperson, members of parliament, thank you very much for the opportunity. We do appreciate it. Thank you.
Really well, over to
thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of Parliament, Acting National Commissioner, and dear colleagues. I will be presenting the stress plan and the APP, and I will actually be able to take the meeting through different parts of the stress plan. And when we come to the actual plan, the budget program would request that each program manager present the section or the part that deals with the program. So they will be presenting from where they are sitting. Our plans are aimed at contributing towards the achievement of the ideals that are stipulated in the National Development Plan. So we're using this plan as a build-up step towards achieving those critical milestones. The presentation will focus on the introduction. Then we look at the strategic plan overview of the department. We'll share with the committee our vision, mission, and core values. We will also share with the committee the legislative framework that gives rise to our existence. We will also discuss the situational analysis of factors that affect the work that we do and those factors that actually have led to us deriving some of the critical strategic indicators and performance issues. So we're looking at both internal and external factors. We also share with you how we have created linkage between our plans with broader government plans, especially the National Development Plan, the Midterm Strategic Framework, as well as other key outputs from the JCPS cluster play outcome. We'll also share with the meeting the strategic outcome-orientated goals of the department, and also share with everyone the budget programs that we have, the five of them that we have. And then soon after that, we'll go into the details of annual performance plans, the total budget allocation, and then we'll conclude. As I said, the purpose of this presentation is to brief this August committee on both the stress plan and the annual performance plans. In terms of the stress plan, there are different parts of the plan as prescribed by National Treasury, and I will actually summarize those key issues that are sitting in those different parts, especially the part A of the planning framework. The department, we have to give a strategic intent whereby we share with everyone through the plan a desired service delivery standards, which calls for a stretch and leverage of resources to meet those articulated service delivery standards that we have actually shared with everyone. We're also going to give an overview, meaning that we'll share with the committee the building blocks of this plan, focusing on all components of the plan as prescribed or as in line with the framework of planning in government. Would also share with this meeting the value system and the organizational culture. As a department, we have agreed upon and we have put in place the value system or the values that will drive the way in which we do business, and we'll be able to share that with this meeting. We'll also clarify the mandate of the department, basically sharing with the meeting our reason for existence. We'll share with everyone here some elements of the situational analysis. That is the analysis that we actually undertook to create the basis for our crafting of these current plans. So we look at our performance environment, we look at the organizational environment, as well as the strategic planning process. Also critical to building up the plan is to have performance information. So we'll share with everyone the goals and objectives of the department's plans, the outcomes and outputs, indicators and targets. Now, as I clearly indicated earlier, that our strategy has different parts, part one being vision, mission and values, the legislative mandate, situational analysis, outcome-oriented goals, the part B focusing on the elements of performance, issues related to resources and the management of risks. And part C will be demonstrating how our plans are actually linked to other internal plans that we have as an organization, and therefore focus also on the annual performance plan, which is the year one of the MTEF period. Our vision is driven by the mandate that we have of providing cohesional services, but we are emphasizing that it must be the best that we provide, but also is driven by the fact that as a cluster, the JCPS, we have a role to make sure that this country is safe. Therefore, after reviewing our vision, we came to, for the past 2 years, we came to a conclusion that our vision must be in alignment with those key issues. Therefore, we think that our vision is providing best correctional services for a safer South Africa. Our mission as well is informed and inspired by the role that we play in ensuring that our country is safe and the manner in which we have to ensure that safety through contributing to a just, peaceful and safer South Africa, through making sure that there is effective, humane incarceration of those in our care, we rehabilitate them and we socially reintegrate them back to the society as responsible law-abiding citizens. We have identified the 8 values that I've earlier talked about, and our plans and actions will be conceived and implemented within the context of the values that we have agreed on as an organization. We strongly believe that values do not drive the organization. In fact, they drive people within the organization. Therefore, we think that these values that we've agreed upon must be internalized by each and every one of us so that they actually have meaning as and when we implement the mandate that we have. In terms of each value, I would like to take the committee through in terms of what it means. I must also indicate that as Acting National Commissioner said earlier, we had a discussion with both Minister and Deputy Minister on Monday. We had a first interaction of taking them through our plans, of which these plans were developed before the new administration. And as and when we're interacting, there is very critical and fundamental issues that they would want us to reflect on and make sure that they form part and parcel of our plans going forward. So we have captured those issues. We have actually been working on those issues. So in a very short period, we'll be submitting to Parliament and other relevant stakeholders an errata where we will actually be reflecting the issues that both Minister and Deputy Minister want to see in our plans going forward. Now, development is one of those issues that, as when we presented to both principals, was actually raised. In terms of our values, we're basically saying that we want to enable and empower our staff and those who are in our care, which are offenders, to have faith in the potential of people, providing opportunities and facilities for growth. Now, the minister's concern on this value was that we have actually been inward looking in terms of the way we view things. So his view is that we also need to be able to look outwardly to see how then do we also make a contribution to our society in various ways. So that is one of those elements that we are going to really work towards integrating in our plans. Integrity also becomes critical as our value. We believe and we want every one of us to be honest. All of us should disassociate ourselves from all forms of corruption as unethical conduct. And there must also be sound business practices other than when we do business within an outside organization. We also need to be effective, to be productive, to make sure that we continuously use best work methods so that we improve our service delivery imperatives. We need to also make sure that the services that we provide are of an excellent nature. In terms of equity, as an organization, we are committed to non-discrimination. We are committed to implement the policies of government, such as affirmative action. We are committed to ensure that there is gender policy equality. as well as making sure that in the way in which we do business, we integrate issues of disabilities as and when necessary. As far as accountability is concerned, we are saying as an organization we desire to perform well, we want to, or we are accepting accountability for our behavior as individuals and as collectives, as well as make sure that we become commitment in the work that we do. As far as justice, we have to ensure that we treat everyone fairly, offenders as well as officials. There has to be justice for all of us, and there must be fairness and equality before the law. From security point of view, as a security department, and security being central to our business, we believe that safety of employees, vendors, and community are actually central in the way in which we do business. Now, the last element is Ubuntu. We really value this critical element, because without this element, we are not going to be able to achieve what we need to do. We're dealing with souls. Our responsibility is to change souls and behavior amongst ourselves and even for our fellows. So the Ubuntu principle actually is the core value that should assist us to drive our business. Now, in terms of the legislative framework, that is the mandate that gives rise to this organization or this department, we are actually taking our mandate from the Constitution and also different sections that we are actually administering that are in line with those constitutions, with the Constitution. We outlined them here. We also get our mandate from the Correctional Services Act, 111 of 1998, as amended, as well as the Criminal Procedure Act, 51 of 97. And as well as different pieces of progressive legislation that we are administering, such as the White Paper on Corrections in South Africa, the White Paper on Remand Detention, the Correctional Services Matters, Correctional Matters Amendment Act, and other applicable acts that we administer as and when we do our business. We also make sure that in terms of the relevant court rulings that changes the way in which we do business, we align those rulings so that we can be able to be in line with court decisions. We also ensure that we comply with the policies of the department that are actually driving our systems and processes and business internally. Other relevant acts that we clearly participate and make sure that we implement is the Child Justice Act, the Promotion of Access to Information Act, the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, Basic Conditions of Employment, Occupational Health and Safety Act, Labor Relations Act, Personal Information Act, Protection of Personal Information Act, Public Service Act, as well as other administrative or operational acts that actually assist us to do the work that we are supposed to be doing. In terms of the situational analysis, as and when we are preparing these plans, we actually had to cover different areas. We looked at the performance of the organizations for the previous years. We focused on also the organizational environment, as well as ensuring that all that we do is in line with our strategic planning processes. In terms of the performance environment, we actually had to identify key delivery issues within the environment that we are operating in. But those key issues were, firstly, we focus on the external issues. Our performance is rooted in moving towards the realization of the ideals of the Constitution, as I said earlier, of the Correctional Services Act, of the White Paper on Corrections, the White Paper on Remand. And we also acknowledge the fact that our environment externally is influenced and shaped by the criminal justice system, its size, as well as the nature of the inmate population, community corrections populations, and the state of the departmental infrastructure. As and when other departments strive towards achieving their targets, like, for example, the SAPS pushing their targets of arrest, then automatically those have consequences in terms of the way in which we are going to accommodate those who end up in our centers. As well as other activities of the Criminal Justice System Department that are actually directly impacting on our environment. As I said, those trans arrests, the investigation processes, the case flow management and case backlogs, as well as the sentencing trend. But we also hope that now that we're a new ministry, some of these things we can deal with them internally without having to point fingers to justice or... We also, from our analysis, look at factors such as the information and communication technology systems in the criminal justice system. The idea is to have one system that can be able to flow in terms of the way in which we do business, from the time somebody is arrested until the time somebody gets into our system. In terms of the organizational environment, we have identified issues related to human resources. Critical are the attraction and retention of our critical staff, implementation of collective agreements. On matters of IT, the key issue was the master information systems plan, as well as the different IT systems that we operate in the organization. The way issues that we looked at in terms of the way in which we handle our finances, the way in which we do our procurement, and those were the internal issues that as and when we developed this plan, we looked at and developed plans that are actually going to be able to resolve some of these challenges. We also had to look at the planning process, as I said earlier, that the current plan that we are presenting to this committee was produced through a series of engagement at different levels, at different forums, where executive management was involved. From 2013 as well as early 2014. And we also used previous strategies that were developed. We focused on the 12 outcomes of government. We looked at the vision of the minister, the vision of the national commissioner, the strategy, the transformation strategy that was developed under his leadership. We had several sessions with executive management so as to identify those key issues, all in line with, or all in making sure that we align with the most critical policy document of this country, which is the NDP and its vision. We developed our APPs based on the plans that we currently have, and we actually cover in 1 year, which is the current financial year, as well as including 2 additional years in order for us to be in line with the midterm expenditure framework. We decided as a department to keep and align our annual performance plans in terms of the existing stretch plan, as there were no major changes before we came and made this presentation to the portfolio committee. We only tabled the annual performance plan, and we didn't actually table the strategic plan due to reasons stated above. The draft midterm strategic framework, okay, I think the previous, I must actually indicate that the previous bullet, that was in line with the directive that we received at the beginning of this calendar year from both presidency as well as national treasury. The draft midterm strategic framework of 14 to 19 and the NDP has been instrumental in determining the desirable outputs that inform the key performance indicators for this financial year. What we also did was to link our plans to the broader government planning framework. So we took our cue from the election manifesto of the ruling party, particularly focusing on the fight against crime and corruption. So that became our basis for identifying our strategic interventions. Then we looked at the 14 government outcomes. In the previous administration we had 12, but a decision by cabinet was taken that this new administration focus on the 14, which is inclusion of social protection, as well as nation building and social cohesion. So what we did with the organization, we used our base outcome number 3, which is our people in Africa are and who are safe, as well as looking at all these outcomes, because the way in which we do business will actually effectively contribute to most of the outcomes that are actually outlined by government. In terms of outcome number 3, as driven by the JSPS cluster, we are actually contributing to the mid-term strategic framework on the area of contributing towards reducing repeat offending or recidivism. Our contribution is to make sure that the percentage of those who are sentenced subject to correctional programs increases. There is a decrease in the percentage of parolees who violate their parole conditions, as well as ensuring that we decrease the percentage of those parolees who violate their conditions. We also have to ensure that we link our plans to the National Development Plan, particularly focusing on outcome number 3. So we looked at the 2 chapters that are relevant on the National Development Plan, which is chapter 12 as well as chapter 14. Now, what we did in this slide, in the 2 or 3 slides that are coming, I will be demonstrating how, as a department, we are actually contributing to the 14 outcomes, some of the 14 outcomes, as well as some of the chapters that are actually sitting in the National Development Plan. The first one is on education. Outcome number 1, in terms of providing quality basic education, which is reflected in the National Development Plan, is chapter 9, which its heading is improving education and training and innovation. As a department, we are ensuring that there are school facilities and offenders that are provided with an opportunity to attend educational and skills programs within our centers. As far as health is concerned, we are contributing to outcome number 2, for a long and healthy life for all South Africans, which is chapter 10 in the National Development Plan, focusing on promotion of health. As a department, we have hospital facilities that ensure that offenders' health needs are being catered for. We have food services that we have resourced with necessary required human resources. We have equipment and facilities requirements. As of the 31st of March 2014, we had 68.7% of inmates who were tested for HIV, and there were 29 management areas contracted healthcare waste services. This is also an issue that the minister has raised in our interaction on Monday, to say that we need to, as an organization, and I think it will come as an alert, not to look at only the last part of managing health. So our focus should be on preventing HIV and other related illnesses, coming up with strategies as to how we actually prevent and how then we manage those who are actually affected or infected by the disease within our centers. So that's one issue that we are looking at as an organization, and we will basically make sure that we properly craft this strategy so that it actually addresses the minister's instructions. The third element is outcome number 3, which is our outcome, making sure that all people in South Africa are and feel safe. Chapter 12 and Chapter 14 of the NDP talks to this outcome. And then, in terms of our contribution, we have say that almost is a plus-minus number as the numbers changes on the daily basis. By the time we developed this, we had about 156,237 number of inmates that were incarcerated. and also show that as far as fighting corruption is concerned, those officials in our department who are involved in corrupt activities are being dealt with. We have a total of 103 officials that were dismissed in the previous financial year, and this clearly demonstrates our willingness to deal with corruption. We also developed and we are implementing anti-corruption strategy, which is focusing on prevention, investigation, as well as sanctioning. In terms of outcome number 5, which is skilled and capable workforce to support an inclusive growth path, aligned to Chapter 9 of the National Development Plan, which is improving education, training, and innovation, our contribution is that to date, we have 21,063 officials that are subjected to training in line with workplace skills gap. This was also one of the issues that Minister Interim Minister raised to say, yes, indeed, you are doing it for yourselves as the organization. But I think as a country, we have a responsibility to ensure that we give an opportunity to those that do not have the opportunity to get access to the workplace. Therefore, it's important for us going forward, which we will have to sit down and look at, to ensure that we increase the number of interns that actually get an opportunity to come and do internships within our system and expose those young people into the environment that we are operating in. In terms of bottom number 11 of creating a better South Africa and a better Africa and the world, Chapter 7 of the NDP is clearly articulating the position of South Africa in the world. And thus far, as an organization, for the past years, we have been chairing the what you call ACSA, African Correctional Services Association, since it was launched in 2008. We are the chair. We have been facilitating discussions in terms of how to link and make sure that correctional services in Africa is seamless, correctional services in Africa share the best practices, and. So we have been very much instrumental to making sure that we provide that necessary support and contribute to this outcome as well as the National Development Plan. In terms of the strategy, we actually obviously did use, have to identify the mandate. We had to understand our legal framework that governs us. We crafted our vision and mission statements. We outlined our organizational goals as well as putting or setting performance indicators and targets. Now, the Department of Correctional Services consists of these three core functions. The first one, we have a responsibility to ensure that there is effective justice system. And by ensuring that, we make sure that we do it through effective management of demand processes. We also have a responsibility to ensure that society is protected through incarcerated offenders being secured and rehabilitated. Lastly, we ensure that our society is protected by offenders being reintegrated into the community as law-abiding citizens. So all these three key functions are covered in our organizational structure. We've got chief deputy commissioners that are actually making sure that we realize these key ideals and these key commitments that we have. Now, the department has 5 programs, and these programs are linked to the budget programs as a requirement by the National Treasury. Now, we have program number 1, which is administration, and the business units that are actually falling under program 1 is ministry, management, finance, internal audit, corporate services, office administration, as well as residential administration. And program 2 is incarceration. It now looks at security operations, business units, offender management, remand detention, and facilities. Program 3 is rehabilitation, and under this program, there are sub-programs, correctional program, offender development, psychological, social, and spiritual services. Program 4 is care, that is offender care, and under it we have nutritional services, health services and hygienic services for offenders. Program 5 is social reintegration. It deals with matters related to parole administration, supervision, community reintegration, office accommodation, and community corrections. I will take the committee through each program and what it means. As I said, Program 1, consisting of all those business units, its main purpose is to provide leadership, strategic management, and administrative support to the department. And there are four strategic objectives that drive this program. That's when we do plans, we are actually guided by making sure that these objectives are achieved. The first one is ensuring that we build an organizational capacity to enhance service delivery, ensure that there is effective management of business processes to promote good governance and ethical administration, to ensure that we provide secured ICT infrastructure and business systems, to ensure that we professionalize for effective human resource management and development. And the baseline for this program is centered around a number of factors. What we are saying is that in order for this department to operate on the basis of its approved structure, the department, we are closing the vacancy rate, which was standing at 5.4% at the end of the previous financial year. The number of administrative systems on information management, planning and monitoring and reporting were implemented, as well as acknowledging the fact that as the chair of ACLA, we established a secretariat and ACLA has been operational during the previous financial year. And how we justify the existence of this program? We think that it is actually coordinating the overall strategic and budget planning direction of the department and other related activities. This program provides information technology services and human resource services. And the program is actually linked to outcome number 4, which is an outcome that is focused on a skilled and capable workforce that supports an inclusive growth path for the country. Program number 2, its purpose is to provide appropriate services and well-maintained physical infrastructure for safe and secure conditions of detention, consistent with human dignity of inmates, personnel, as well as members of the public. And there are 3 strategic objectives that this program is focusing on. One is to ensure that there is effective management of remand detention processes to promote and enable participation in court processes, to ensure that those who are in remand and those offenders are held in secure, safe and humane conditions, and to also ensure that there is effective case management processes. In terms of the baseline, currently we have 243 facilities. Our population is currently standing at 157,170. Percentage of assault is currently standing at 4.67%. There are unnatural deaths and escapes, both standing at less than 8%. The justification of this program, we think that we provide services on compiling correctional sentence plans, and this applies necessary measures in order to reduce the average length of time in remand detention facilities. And this program is actually linked to outcome number 3. In terms of program number 3, its purpose is to provide inmates with needs-based programs and interventions to facilitate their rehabilitation and enable their social reintegration. The objectives that we have that are strategic, that we've identified, is 4 of them. Ensuring that there is effective incarceration and rehabilitation to protect the society. The offender behavior is targeted through access to correctional programs and psychological, social and spiritual services. Ensuring that offenders' human and personal development is improved through various interventions such as literacy, education and skills competency programs. We also ensure that we have a reduced rate of trading so as we can contribute to a safer South Africa. The baseline is that 54% of offenders with this correctional sentence plan are able to complete their programs annually. We also offer adult education and training, FET and skills development programs, and the baseline for those offenders who need psychological services is actually sitting at 16.6%. 79.9% of offenders needing social work services are also receiving those services. The justification of this program is that it's geared towards preparing inmates or offenders for their eventual release. It provides educational and skills development programs as well as psychological, social and spiritual care services. It helps inmates or offenders to improve their re-entry into the communities. And this program is linked to outcome number 3 of making sure that people in South Africa are safe. Outcome number 1 in terms of improvement of the quality of basic education. Outcome number 5, ensuring that skilled and capable workforce to support an inclusive growth path, as well as 3 different chapters in the National Development Plan. Program number 4 is care. As I said, it's care for those who are incarcerated. The purpose of this program is to ensure that we provide needs-based care services to maintain the well-being of all inmates in our custody. And there are 2 objectives that drive this program. It's to ensure that our inmates are provided with appropriate nutritional services, appropriate access to health care services, as well as hygiene services that is provided and that is appropriate. And the design for this is a survey on the status of nutritional services for continuous improvement on the provision of nutritional services that were conducted. 68.7 of the inmates tested for HIV and 95% of offenders who qualify are on ARV, as well as 75% TB cure rate. The justification for this program centered around an obligation that our inmates in our centers, in our remand detention facilities, receive nutritional and health services so that they can effectively operate. We also provide HIV, AIDS, TB and other health services to those other inmates so that we can have a healthy inmate population. The links are actually also linked to the health outcomes number 2 as well as the security outcome number 3 and different, and this to the 10 of the NDP. Program number 5 is the program that is aimed at making sure that we properly manage the social reintegration of those who come out of our care. Its purpose is to provide services focused on offenders, preparation for release, effective supervision of offenders placed under the system of community corrections, and facilitation of social reintegration into their communities. Now, the strategic objectives for this program is actually 3. We identified that probationers and parolees must be rehabilitated, monitored, and accepted as law-abiding citizens by their different communities. Ensure that offenders are provided with access to restorative justice process, as well as ensuring that there is effective management and functioning of the parole box. The baseline for this program is that as a department, we are currently working on improving the victim involvement program. We're ensuring that there is effective functioning of our CMCs, submission of profiles to the CSBS. We are implementing the electronic monitoring system. We have launched a halfway house system for successful reintegration of parolees as well as probationers. And as we justify this program, we are saying that social reintegration is critical and necessary for supervision of probationers, facilitation of inmates towards successful reintegration into their different communities. This program is also linked to outcome number 3, specifically chapter 12 of making of the NDP, which focused on building safer communities. Now, in terms of the process of our planning, we made consideration to different plans that we have as a build-up to a strategic plan. We looked at the risk register, the HR strategic plan, the workplace skills plan, master information systems plan, the service delivery improvement plan, the spending plan, national building plan, as well as the procurement plan. I would love Honorable Chairperson to take a pause on this one, as the next presentations will be done by branch heads with regards to each program.
Thank you very much for a well-organized ETA presentation. Are we taking comments before we take others? That's very constructive. Yeah, I think we'll take the document as read. In fact, we are expected to read the document before we come. So that we don't... Honorable Smith, you want to say?
Yes, no, sir. I just want to respond to Mr. Swart. I have no problem with the time constraint. Right. You know, Chair, my understanding is that the finances follow the stress plan and so on. So if there are questions on their stress plan, I don't know if we should ask those questions first, because the budget is supposed to implement that stress plan, and unless you're saying to us, when we discuss the budget, we can go back to the stress plan, because there are certain things here that I think shouldn't even be left unquestioned. So I'm just trying to, from a process point of view, let's agree on the plan and then go to the budget.
We're not dispensing with the questions on the plan. We're only saying that we should take the rest as read and do with it before we leave. So, can I take hands?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think, in contrast to some of the other strat plans that have been developed, this one, amongst other things, it contains core values, and I'm very pleased it does, because leadership is all about values and organizations driven by values. But I want to tell you that if those are the values that the department has, I don't believe they have them at the moment. And I think there's an enormous challenge on the part of the department to not only ensure that organizational values gets driven right down to the section level, because at the moment you're not going to tell me that all 42,000 employees of the DCS are filled with the desire to develop people, are full of integrity, honesty, dissociating themselves from all forms of corruption, that they're productive, that they work the best work methods. You all worked in the environment, you know what I'm talking about. And unless the values are taken right down to the bottom level and made real to the people in health phase, the stat plan is not going to work, and that responsibility lies with management and leadership of the department. The second thing is this, and it's in a way sort of illustrates what I was talking about earlier, and that is that in outcome and alignment 3, outcome 3, where they're talking about 103 officials were dismissed in the previous financial year, and this clearly shows that the department is dealing with corruption. Well, 103 officials out of 39,930 filled posts in the department represents 0.26%. And I just don't think that's good enough. I mean, we all, every year, we interrogate annual report, we see that hundreds of disciplinary cases are brought before the department. Very, very few of them land up in dismissal. Most of them are settled, and most of them just disappear because there was not enough evidence or they get delayed or whatever else the case might be. The other thing is, if we're serious about rehabilitation, and that's program three in the presentation, we're talking about 64% of people with correctional sentence plans are able to complete their correctional programs per year. Now, correctional sentence plans are only given to people with a sentence of more than 2 years. And you are telling me that only 64% of those people that have sentence plans are actually have the opportunity to, you know, follow that sentence plan. If you factor in everybody who's in a correctional centre, that percentage drops to 39%. And what worries me is that what is happening in the vast majority of cases is that we have a situation of yet and there. People just eat, and then they go and lie on their sauce, and then they go and eat, and they go and lie on their sauce. And that is a breeding ground for further gangsterism and further criminality. So I think we've had this argument before, but again, I think that unless there's a much greater and more serious emphasis on rehabilitation in the first place and social integration, which if I look at the number of, it's not in this presentation, it's one of the other ones, I think, the number of people that are actually employed in that section, social reintegration section, I think it was 5.1% of the departmental resources land up in social reintegration. And no wonder the number of people on probation and parole is hanging down, because they're not enough, it's not aligned. So those are my concerns at the moment, Chair. I'll broaden out on something when we get to actual budget.
Honourable members, if we could just bear in mind that this is the fifth parliament, and we have a strat plan here, which tells us what the department wants to do. Maybe we should be saying if there's something wrong with the strat plan of what they want to do, because if we can pick out the past, then we won't be able to move forward. I think let's look at this document with a view to seeing whether or not it is a good document that can take us forward, and then going forward then we can start monitoring on whether or not they are implementing it as
except already, Chair, that there is an expression that those people who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it.
That one we accept, but I think that really we want to come out of here to say this document is not helpful, or this is a good document, let's give them a chance to implement and let's see what happens. Honourable Smith.
Thank you. In line with what you're saying, Chair, if we go to page 30 and 29 and 30, or I don't know if it's slide 29 and 30, but that talks about the single capture of inmate information, integrated physical security system, and positive identification. Now that is core to the security. My concern, Chair, is that according to their performance targets, those things are only going to be finalized in 2017-2018. That is 24 years after democracy. What they're saying as the department, it's going to take us 24 years into democracy before we are able to systematically identify somebody that's in our facilities. Currently, we don't know. That's the reality. So I'm proposing that those dates must be brought closer. I don't think we can afford another 5 years of just getting a system to do what they should have been doing. So that's the first point here. I think we have to accept 5 years to do that. The second one is what we spoke about yesterday, the remand detentions, Rotner. You know, the strat plan talks only about finalizing policy. Now, Chair,
agree on the white paper last term, I would have thought they're talking about implementation of the remand detention management. They find that they're saying we're going to finalize this policy. I would have expected them to say we're now going to have overalls, as an example, delivered tomorrow, because that's the policy we've taken, that remand detention will have overalls. We need to know when is that going to happen. Remand detention will be, what do we call it, ring-fenced. It's those type of things. I don't think we should accept as Parliament that they're still talking about policy formulation after we've done this. So that's on remand detention generally, according to the threat plan. Then the last one here, and I think this is probably where I don't think they're going to be able to implement what they're promising Parliament. You see, they talk about education and they talk about health. Now, there's this discussion and debate that is there, Chair. Education has a single political authority. In other words, the Department of Education. I'm not sure that correctional services would be able to do those things unless you integrate it with the things of, why do you put it as a target if it's reliant on the department? Similarly with health, Chair. Minister of Health says, I am the Minister of Health, I will decide on ARVs. The department comes and says, we will provide so many ARVs. And when they fail, the argument would be that the Department of Health didn't do it. So my proposal is that until we have those things finalized at a political level, it shouldn't be part of the target because they are setting themselves up for failure around education and health. And then the final one, Chair, that I want to talk about is the department says it's only going to increase bed space by 1,000. We know there's going to be more than 1,000 inmates. So we're already exacerbating overcrowding. And my question is, for the past two terms, we've had budgets for five prisons. And I'm not saying that's the solution, but those budgets every year have been rolled over. Have we now discarded the fact that we are going to build new facilities? And why is that money, if it's not going to be used, budgeted for? Shouldn't we be then using it for health or anything else? But it is no use having a budget for facilities, and every year we don't use it, because that's service delivery denied. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Smith, I think your approach is very helpful. That we should actually make proposals where we think that things are not fine. Make proposals, because we have different experiences. We need to pull those experiences to find a solution, and really look at the challenges in question and the society under. So I hope other members will also adopt that approach. Let's not just have consents, but also let's have proposals so to take this next forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Much as I agree with Honourable Smith that health should not be an objective because it lies outside of correctional service. But may I propose to them also that when I vote for their budget, I do it with a clean conscience. HIV is infectious, but it's actually not the number one killing disease at the moment. So I would caution them prioritizing it just because it has a pressure group out there in the name of treatment action campaign. Diabetes at the moment in the whole wide world is the number one killing disease. So I want to caution them singling out and call the others and others. Specify them, have a program that addresses all life-threatening diseases. And at the moment, diabetes is leading in the world in this continent.
Mazak, I think we are moving in the right direction.
Chair, I think I just wanted to reiterate the point made earlier of improvement of the IT system in the prison. And I'm not sure whether we are improving or we're beginning system from scratch, because previously when you used to have such aid, at the time you visited the prison, and we had a very beautiful system, starting from the entrance where people who visit a particular prison are using the pictures of the, you know, standard visitors, and we had a, through the same system to record this and things like that. I'm not sure whether you did manage to continue to upgrade that system, or the system is, you have managed to do away with that system, because that system was very good. And indeed, if we're 20 years into democracy, there's no reason why we should actually be talking about doing something 5 years from now. is actually delaying processes. It exacerbates some of the problems that exist within the prison. We need to have an IT system in prison in order. And if you look at other departments, like our own check system in the country, how it was actually improved and revolutionized overnight because of the IT system and ensuring it in the prisons, we can be in the position to do the same thing. In terms of the percentage that you are actually alluding to for inmates, 58.7% of inmates with HIV/AIDS, at what point do you get to know if an inmate is HIV positive or not? You see, I'm actually asking this question because I want to know actually whether the inmates get infected within the prison or they can be infected already. And if they get infected within prison cells, what is it that causes it and how you are actually able to prevent it. In terms of the remand detentions, I think indeed what is important is really to roll out the plan that exists already so that we can be in the position to manage to proceed with what has been worked on previously, because whatever we are doing should actually be an extension of what has been done before, so that we don't keep on repeating what could actually be now being rolled out. Your presentation in the future should actually also help in terms of the distribution of prisons. We need to understand the distribution of prisons, the prison in relation to the prison population, and also reference should be made to the criminal records or maybe the crime situation, so that you know it actually manages to talk to the police. What is good for now is the fact that you are now with justice and you can be in the position to align the court rulings with your the kind of services that you provide, which actually indeed has helped to sort out the problem. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. On slide 15, outcome number 3, it reads building safer communities, and the DCF contribution is listed as in the figures of incarceration. I want to suggest to them that include rehabilitation there too, because incarcerating people doesn't necessarily make South Africa free. Some of them are even wrongly incarcerated. They should be there. In the capitalist system, sometimes they are not found guilty because they are guilty. They are only found guilty because your lawyer was crazy, because you couldn't afford an expensive. So for me, please, on that objective, on that outcome, don't just say incarceration, include rehabilitation, ensuring that they don't go back to jail. It's contributing to the safer South Africa too.
Any other question? Mr. Horn. Let's make proposals and not amend the document now, because others may have other views. So before we reach consensus on amending things, let's not start from that.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, my input actually goes to program 4, and unless my document is not the only one that's not complete, mine only has the targets for programs 1 and 2. But be that as it may, it goes towards rehabilitation, and I think it links to what the Honourable Smith has already said about setting oneself up for failure, and we will be getting to the budget, but to the best of my understanding, Program 2's budget only increases by 8%, but then in terms of the percentages aimed for further education and training in FET, there is a massive increase the department aims for. So unless there's some other way, barring finances, they hope to achieve increases, for example, of the further education and training program from 1.6% to 18% of those incarcerated, and of those involved in FET college programs from 33% to 80%, with only an 8% budget increase, I think their own targets are stretched way beyond what could realistically be achieved, and I would like to comment on that. Thank you.
I hope we will also bear in mind that the majority of the people in this practitioner center are youth who are actually entitled to education, all of them. So maybe we ourselves must say, how do we handle this thing? Because we can't say others must not have access because of, because of that. But anyway, we'll debate at the right forum. Any other? Otherwise, I... Honorable Major.
Just to add that, please also address the age limit. So I think that is problematic too.
Honorable Chairman, I think we have the business owners. So most of these questions have been capturing them, and I would request that they respond to them accordingly.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and committee members. I'd like to respond to the question that was raised by Honorable Mr. Self on the issue of the establishment or the positions in for social integration, the files, the caseload. I'd just like to share with the members that Community Corrections as a branch is a fairly new branch, which is 2 years now, was established in 2012. Yes, we are using an establishment that was there before Community Corrections became a branch, when it was still a chief directorate, which is selling currently 2,078 posts. The caseload of the caseload changes daily, but the last time we checked our caseload, we are sending at 67,743, which is broken down into 48,716 parolees, 17,096 probationers, 1,931 awaiting trial persons. The department is in the process of finalizing the structure for the newly created branch, which is Community Corrections, with the hope that this structure will be expanded so that we can have enough human resources in the branch, which is responsible for social reintegration. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'm also going to respond to the concern raised by Honourable Self, and that's in terms of correctional programs. Perhaps it's just a maybe misinterpretation, but the target within the plan indicates 64% completion of correctional programs. It does not mean that the others do not have correctional centres plans. But this target here refers to those offenders that complete the correctional programs that they are attending. Thank you.
Any other? Your name again?
It's Prisoner Rotman.
Rotman. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairman and Honourable Members. I'm going to be replying to the questions on remand detention and particularly the white paper on remand detention. It's true, we presented the white paper on remand detention to the Portfolio Committee at the end of the last financial year. What the difference is with this particular white paper to the white paper on correction, it wasn't a complete turnaround of policy within the department. The policies that we have within the white paper are not leading to new legislation, they're not entirely new. They take their mandate from the Constitution, from the Child Justice Act, from a number of other acts already in existence, including the newest Correctional Matters Amendment Act. The fact that we put into the FACTAN and the APP the policy development is not to now create new policies. It's to drill down from the overall policy of the white paper into a very specific one. If you'll see on the presentation, the ones that we have that we're talking about are, for example, the procedure manual on referrals to court based on length of detention, on uniform, on the privilege system and disciplining system. So we're trying to sort of drill down that ultimately we end up with a policy procedure and a manual for every single official on the ground that is able to deal with all aspects of remand detention. So we're not simply creating new policy. We have already started implementing where we have been obliged to do so by various things. The remand detention uniform, for example, is planned for this year, and many of the things that we have put into the STRAT plan or the ACP, we do have now operational plans. So, for example, the monitoring of our 49E and 49G, the new sections in the Correctional Matters Amendment Act on length of detention or referral of terminally ill, as well as the uniform that we want to start rolling out from the end of the financial year. So those are a number of things that are already being done. But ultimately, to allow for the implementation of the white paper, one very specific thing being the risk tool. We have identified one issue where we need to look at the remand detention population as a whole and do far more risk assessment of those people that we do as we do with sentence. And there you see also in the strategic plan very specifically linked to the privilege system or the disciplinary system for remand detainees that we haven't had previously, which will then assist in the ultimate implementation of the policy objective of the white paper on better identifying risk within our facility. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to respond on the information technology side. We take note of the timelines, but the timelines are basically influenced by the number of legacy systems that we currently having, which are almost 50. So within a short period of time, you can't integrate 50 legacy systems into one. But what we take cognizance of is there are many systems that we will basically have them before the end of the 5-year period. Within the next 2 years, we'll definitely have the full admission, release, rehabilitation technology in place. And we're definitely improving on what has been existing, because currently what we have almost 243 independent systems. So you can't run an environment with 243 independent systems. We're consolidating all those systems into one so that when you request for information, you are requesting for information from one source, not from multiple sources. So that's the reason why the timeline is also long, and that's the reason why we're doing the modernization that we're currently doing, which is also taking improvements from what has been already implemented, issues of biometrics, issues of photos, issues of physical body identification and things like that, and also integration into the justice system. So hence we have on that timeline.
Thank you. Honourable Chairperson, can I address the issue of education training as well as the health aspect? In terms of the target for education and training, and linked to that also the comment and proposal by Honourable Smith, that we have done this as a department, setting the target for education and training based on the resources that we have within the Department of Correctional Services. So taking or bearing in mind the number of qualified educators that we have, the number of offenders that we utilize as facilitators, and other resources that we also have coming from the community, we have set the target. But the target, moving from another whole concern that moving from 1.6 to 80%, perhaps I should just give the perspective on that. If you take what was happening there was that we took the previous year's performance, and you can go into the documents there. We have said that based on the resources that we have, let us increase that with 10%. So you will find that the target goal for 2014-15, if you go into that particular one that you've mentioned, that denominator, the catchment area that we have there, we have said is 622. So the 622 is coming from a previous year performance increase by 10%. The 80% that we said is that, and that is how we need to read that one, is that we want to maintain 80% participation in that program. So those 600 or whatever we have as a target for 498 out of the 622, we want 80% of the 498 to complete that program for the year. So the 80% is just reflecting on that, on participation and throughout the academic year. So that is applicable to both education as well as the skills development component. You'll see that the logic there is right through. Secondly, in terms of the healthcare, we do not single out the HIV and AIDS. There's also a great concentration on the reduction of people infected with TB. But what we are saying here is that the question was asked that when do we know? We do not test on admission, and hence we have a concentrated focus on on encouraging offenders to be tested. So that particular indicator dealing with testing of offenders is to encourage, it's encouragement so that we can know that. So we don't do that on admission. On admission we provide assessment, health assessment, and we provide then healthcare treatment in that regard. I think that was the consensus in terms of healthcare and education. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. This is Paul Mokwena, CGDHR. The point that's been raised around the filling of vacancy, indeed, is a valid one which also concerns the department. Yes, when one looks at how the department fares in comparison with other departments, when we did a study last year, the department was rated third overall in terms of the filling of vacancies from a vacancy rate point of view. We do face challenges, particularly in the space of attracting and retaining artisans, educationists, in the engineering sphere, your legal services, medical practitioners, your nurses and your pharmacists and psychologists. And those are areas that are contributing very largely to the increase in the vacancy rate from the 3% that we had indicated previously to where we are right now at over 5%. There are interventions that we have put in place, amongst others being that we have now decentralized the recruitment to the regions. But coupled with that is that moving forward, as soon as we are going to be signing performance agreements, is that filling of vacancies is going to be one of the key performance areas for each and every one of our line managers. Because one has to be quite upfront about that. Perhaps the extent to which we have prioritized recruitment has not been at the right level. Yes, it's tedious, it's time-consuming. If there is any one management occupation that is quite time-consuming, it is that of recruitment and filling of vacancies by virtue of the value chain that one has to go through. But we are saying that if we have to pay the attention that this thing deserves, we are going to essentially have to manage all our line managers by ensuring that the filling of vacancies is included in their performance agreements going forward. Because we do have the capacity to recruit. It is simply that we are not placing the right level of priority in terms of filling the vacancies. Some of the things that we're going to be considering going forward is the partnerships with FET colleges, particularly to absorb the artisans into the department. One of the other interventions that we have put in place is ensuring that all our learners, upon completion of the learnership program, based on merit, they are then absorbed into the entry-level positions. And the simple rationale behind that is that you essentially train people to be able to handle guns, you expose them into the security apparatus of the state, and then releasing them back into society without actually absorbing them creates one a risk, but also you essentially end up being a training institute for the private security industry, which is obviously not the intention of why we go into the leadership. So as things stand, we actually don't have vacancies at entry level. By virtue of having ensured that all the learners, upon completion, they are then absorbed into the entry-level positions. And that ensures that we always have a constant supply of entry-level persons to be able to come to the system. One of the other things that which also affects the other departments, we actually need, and this is what we have raised with the Department of Public Service,
we do need to evaluate the impact of OSDs in terms of the extent to which they have contributed negatively towards our ability as government to attract and retain people. Because, you know, at some point, there has to be a point where we do a post-implementation review of the OSDs and to understand that is actually hampering government's ability to attract and retain professional skills, particularly in the critical and skills areas that I mentioned earlier on. Because the problems that we are facing as a department in terms of attracting the areas that I've mentioned actually cut across all government departments. It's not only correctional services that are expecting to attract and retain social workers, engineering space, psychologists, and so on. And therefore, there has to be that discussion to say to what extent is this thing contributing towards our inability as government across in terms of ensuring that we attract and retain critical and care skills within the departments.
I think South Africans are very gifted in discussing. And sometimes we even discuss things that we know nothing about. I think it is important that you are proactive, you are on the ground, you deal with these things, and then come up with proposals that we can take forward. Otherwise, if we wait for dialogues, which are going to take 20 years, it's not going to happen. But what I wanted to ask from my side is, we are talking about halfway houses. How many do you have? Do you have resources to build? How many have you built? And then do you have rehabilitation and counseling centers? Because I thought that those institutions could help you to prevent this reoffending.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, we do use halfway houses for social integration. We had launched a pilot where we had a halfway house that actually belongs to the department, but it was administered by an NGO. So our approach to halfway houses is that we partner with the NPOs on the ground. Currently, we have 6 halfway houses spread across the country, and the halfway houses we use for people who are due for being considered by parole boards for parole, but when you look at them, they don't have ministerial addresses and support system, so we use basically the halfway houses for those. We partner, we don't actually, as Department of Correctional Services, run the halfway houses, but we partner in terms of the halfway house administration with NGOs. And thank you, Chairman, if I've covered the
on those ones or the established.
Okay, in our halfway houses, the NPOs that run the halfway houses, they run the program according to the collection plans of the offenders. That is, if offenders have not completed their sentence plans inside, when they are paroled, we continue in the halfway houses with those programs. The special NPOs that partner with, they also rope in other NPOs, community-based organizations, NGOs, they work together in terms of doing those programs in the halfway houses. Thank you. Unless it's about another question.
Not another question. I thought this could be linked to what the Minister said about the involvement of faith-based organizations, because they are there, you know where to find them. At least there are some values that they subscribe to. So maybe you want to look at that and work with the SPOs, because these NGOs depend on funding. One day the funding is not there, they collapse and they start again. So there's no stability in that sense.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will address the issue on the facilities that was asked by Honourable and just Smith. In the NDA, which is the current 2014 MTF, in our baseline, we have four major or large projects, about 186 million that is in our baseline for the current financial year, and increasing to 460 million in the outer year. That allocation will go to the creation of bed spaces. Now, we're not talking necessarily new facilities, the existing facilities that we do in rehabilitation of those facilities that
existing bedrooms, which will then result into the department or in this MTF increasing up to 123,248 in the outer year. The issue of the five facilities that was there previously in the basement of the department, you recall, the model at that stage that the department was looking at that stage was going through the BBB model, which was then reviewed. In the process of reviewing that, the department did also an analysis of whether it is effective to have these large centers, because if you recall, Mr. Smith, we were saying five facilities and each facility was going to be 3,000 bed space. So effectively looking at adding 15,000 bed space. So that study indicated to the department that it is not feasible to have these large centers. It is not. In terms of managing those numbers and all that. So what the study then indicated to us is that at the minimum amount of inmates is 500 bed spaces. That is your smallest center. And between 500 and 1,500. So we had then to re-engineer our plans in line with that. And what then the executive and the top management then decided was that then instead of having these five big centers, we need them to have 18 centers. So currently in our plan, we have this 18 as planned. But if you look at them at the MTF, that is not funded. There was a series of engagement with the National Department of Public Works. Add to that, remember, we had then the remand detention facilities that we're planning and looking at. So they have started, I think it's about 10 already, that they've done the first preliminary feasibility, including the, I think about 10 or 11 remand detention facilities. So that process has happened. But for all 18, they have, which is 18, which is your normal facilities, and then you've got the 11 or 10 remand detention facilities. But for all those centers, you must, in terms of the general guidelines, do a feasibility study. Hence, we then had to then restart. So the feasibility outcome that we have are for the five mega centers, which are in different locations to the 18, plus then the 10 or 11 remand detention facilities. Hence, that we're starting in that particular process. So in the process, we are moving in sync with both National Treasury and also with the National Department of Public Works. It is the outcome of the feasibility in terms of the capital planning guidelines that then would then lead us to the second part of actually then saying this is the outcome of feasibility national generic, then these are the resources that we're looking at. So the first part is done. We have budgeted that some more this current financial year the feasibility that should continue for us. That's the platform that will then have to go back to National Treasury and request funding. The funding that was there previously for the five correctional centers that we're going to build for the GDP model, if you call it, was not full funding for the five, it was going to be a deposit of 50% as estimated then to those feasibility studies. But at the time when we then, the department kind of changed the model, then that money was then removed for the percent. As you are sitting in this MTF, we do not have that money. We have to go through the normal request of funds for national insurance using the capital budgeting guidelines that are provided to
the government. How long is it going to take to do the CAT system?
Just to add to that, Chief, I agree with you. That is the first question. But because some of us have benefit of previous experience, I want to say to Minister, if you went to Leopold now, Chair, that facility was pre-apartheid. The juveniles are living in a shanty. You go to Pretoria Central where the females are kept. That was an apartheid facility. It's water and so on. So I hear what Ms. Baraka is saying, that they must do visibility for 18. I don't think we've got time for that, Chairperson. That's my concern, that you can't have Leocop where, in fact, they eat outside in the soccer field. They don't have a dining room. They eat in the soccer field. Now, Ms. Baraka is saying they must go back and do feasibilities for 18. Our term will come and end, Chairperson, and Leocop will still be juveniles living in Mku. And it'll be 25 years. So my proposal really is that this committee must look at that feasibility study of things that Ms. Marekha is talking about, and for us to put the necessary pressure. But 5 years to move juveniles from Leo
5 years to move females from Pretoria. You go to, Cindy will tell you, you go to Venda. The inmates have to undress because there's no air conditioners and they are living, because that place is hot. I don't think that we can continue to do that here. So my appeal to this committee is that we should ask them, I won't argue it further today, but I do think that the first opportunity they should come back and let's have a big debate around the urgency of rehabilitating some of those facilities.
Who does the feasibility study for you?
The first Shepherdson, that's the one that I'm most referring back, it has already been done, the first house that was done by the DPW. But we then wrote sometime early this year to the National Department of Higher Education requesting, or early this financially, I'll need to verify and check, but requesting to participate in one of the, we've already made a contract for the exam of FET College, and the process requested that we participate in that particular tender so that we didn't do feasibility, to fast-track the whole process of feasibility. We then have to ensure that we follow that one as vigorously because it has been checked today.
Maybe we should also address this relationship with the DPW, because they have their own challenges. Now, those challenges are going to impact on you, and we fight on you, whereas you depend on somebody who's not delivering. I think we need to find a way of addressing that relationship. Honorable Self and Honorable Majak.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm very interested in the feasibility study process because I asked a question recently to the Department of Public Works relating to a feasibility study undertaken by DPW into Coles on Viewbook. And I would be very interested if you could shed some light on what exactly that feasibility study is involved in and why, for on what basis was it commissioned by the department.
Thank you, Chair. I've just been tapped by the response in terms of the feasibility study, because for now, what we hear is clear demonstration and articulation of the problem. And normally, feasibility study would be when you think for team justification, which is something. So, indeed, we need to just be careful so that we don't actually find a lot of time to waste it on something that is precisely and straightforward. I want to respond to the answer that was given in terms of IT modernization reasons to actually say that my concern was the 5 years that you have to take to be in the position to modernize your prison system. And the response was to actually to endorse that it's really going to be 5 years and nothing else. And I do believe that it can actually take lesser amount of time. And I think that borders from the kind of procurement system that you've actually put in place and due diligence that you're actually doing around this, because there's a whole number of other things that may actually come to play that have got to do with the correctional services, including maybe the recommendation that there be community service to reduce the prison population, which you still also require IT system because we've got to check prisoners. So basically, I think we really need to get a good service provider to be in the position to manage to do all of this work for you, because also with IT you need to check. So if you're going to run it out for 5 years, by the end of 5 years, the one that started with already needs to be upgraded. So it's going to be like a vicious circle. It's going to be an ongoing problem that can never be sorted out unless you actually manage to get the right system. And another thing in terms of HR systems, you indicated that one of your other objectives is to get skilled and capable workforce. Do you have a skills development plan that actually matches the kind of abilities required for the number of jobs within the department? You know, sometimes we need to be careful about the fact that you do have gaps in terms of the skills that are required, and even the skills development plan does not address it. This is one of the things that can actually make the department be in a position to move forward. So my other question is whether you do have a skills development plan, and how have you been in the position to pull that together?
If I heard properly, it seems that there are some bottlenecks that causes the delay. Now, the question is, what is the source of this bottleneck? because some may result, may not be of their making. So maybe we must look at this procurement system, the legislation, and together identify the bottlenecks and come up with a solution as to how do we address those bottlenecks. Because you members are right saying, if what we are telling now can only happen in 5 years, then the sixth parliament will also get another story that will be done in 5 years. At the end, maybe people will start to wonder, is this parliament and this government relevant? So I think let's address the bottlenecks and deliver to the people, not in 5 years, but now.
I think now we should go by how
Thank you, Shepherdson. I was just looking to give a perspective on the question that you raised with regard to the involvement of the NGOs and other organizations, that it's not only applicable to the halfway houses, but under budget program rehabilitation, you will find the element psychological services, social work services, and spiritual care services. Now, within that, and in your correctional programs, as well as the personal development of offenders also, there are various organizations coming in to assist the department. Some of them come in with their own funding, others need funding. But there is that relationship with organizations to assist with the rehabilitation agenda in the department, and it's not limited to halfway houses. I just want to give that perspective.
One thing one should mention is that, you know, we are a multicultural country, and more than 8% of the country, some may be Christian, Muslim and so on, but the African Christians, African Muslims have one leg in tradition, their tradition, another leg in this other religion. Now, what one picks up is that you'll find a person who has spirit position. He needs a traditional healer to advise him or her. Now, we send a psychiatrist who obviously will make a modern diagnosis which does not fit that person. So, I want to suggest that look at that matter. I mean, we should talk about it at that point, because people say spiritual care. Is spiritual care from a Christian or a Muslim side, or is spiritual care across the board, including our community? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think I've been listening with great interest to the engagement. In general, I think we need to attend to the short bottlenecks. I think we may have to do some oversight on the bottlenecks that are being in charge of this budget. I think we'll appreciate maybe, Chair, this time the department is addressed on the issue of how is this procurement system being structured, because what Honorable Smith is saying, to me, it seems like to be more of a mandatory because of the experience that he has. But if all these issues are still laying, then we'll have a problem. And I want to appeal to the department that the issue of feasibility study, it must only okay where we're not sure. But on a lot of areas that Honorable Smith is speaking about, we're quite now certain that there are gaps there. So how to move in speed? Because we've got to work very hard this 5 years, because we need to radically transform all the correctional services. But what is also lacking, Chair, on this, like the correctional services must not see itself outside the justice. We need that alignment to be very clear, so that you don't have two separate entities. We need an alignment. How do they overlap? How do they use justice itself to strengthen where they need to be, where they need to be strengthened. And in terms of the vacancy rate, Chair, I think we may have to be tied down in terms of time frames. When is this going to be attended, so that we don't want the whole committee to be just a talking exercise without the proper implementation. Thanks.
Can we have a short break and 5-10 minutes and then come back?
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
program rehabilitation is dedicated to deal with the needs-based programs that are offered to adults in form of either training to ensure that they get rehabilitated program care, deals with the needs-based services to care services to all inmates in the department of government detainees and also offenders. Program 5 deals with the parole system and also with the community corrections and under social rehabilitation. Fundamental to the preparation of the 2014 NDF has been the broad guide by the environment that as a country we have to operate under. And the spending ceiling that were provided by National Treasury to all clusters and us not being excluded. The fact that we had as departments, not necessarily business only, we had to reprioritize within the NDF baseline that was there in 2013, and also instructions that we had to find any new policy priorities, any new spending priorities within the more emphasis on spending efficiency and effectiveness in our budgets, and an inflation adjustment of 6.5% in 2014-15, decreasing to 5.4% in the two outer years for compensation of employees, which is the last bill of the department, and an inflation adjustment of 5.5% in this current financial year, and for the, decreasing to 5.4% for the other two financial years for goods and services. And the fact that any inflation outcomes that would be above the 5.4% over the same year, 5.4% that we have to absorb in our own business as department. And that's indicated persons and the local committee that when it comes to absorption.
Technological maybe she wanted to keep you awake. Okay.
Just checking on the before the technology. On the issue of absorbing any inflation outcomes that are above the indicative inflation that are provided to us as departments, for us the pressure mainly is on specifically two main items, which is the food inflation and also for fuel. That's where normally it hits, because the food inflation normally is beyond 5%. I think the result of May indicated that the food inflation was 1.7%. And fuel, we also had hit, and it was the outcome of May for inflation, it was 14.3%. So any then outcome, we have to ensure that we reprioritize ourselves, and in other words, we cannot go to the further during the adjusted estimate time in September to then say we have an inflation outcome on fuel so much, and we've got food inflation of so much, can be therefore actually finance the department, so we have to finance that in our own business. And we then indicating the cost drivers in preparation of the GCS budget. The first one is the inmate population, which includes both sentenced offenders and unsentenced inmates. The next cost driver is supervision cases, which includes both parolees and probation. And the third element is our officials. For this particular MTF, we used 2013-14 as a baseline to project the cost drivers of the MTF for both supervision cases and inmate population. So our supervision caseload, we moved from a base of 66,721, increasing that to 84,707 in the last outer year of the MTF. In terms of the inmate population, we moved from a base of 155,836 and decreasing that to 151,200. Eight inmate population, which includes both remand detainees and also sentenced offenders. With regards to the number of officials over this MTF, we're maintaining a funded establishment of 42,006 posts, and when we took officials currently, at the end of March 2014, we had 2,057 posts that were additional to the 2006 funded post. And the reason that we're having that 2007 is what Mr. Mubena refers to, that when our learners have finalized the learnership, which is a 6-month training program, we currently not releasing them back to unemployment, but we are then upholding them as contract employees. Those are contract employees, we cannot then put them under the post establishment of 2006 and create post addition to the establishment. As of March 2014, our vacancy level was sitting at 5.46%, and the average number of filled posts for the 2014 financial year was 39,950 posts. We closely monitor that, as it was raised before. One of the strategies that we have implemented and intended to implement is the whole issue of decentralizing recruitment to regional level, which we've already done, and entering into partnerships with the Institute of Higher Learning, as indicated before, and I'm aware that we've already had some MOUs with some of these institutions. One of them, I think, is the Durban University of Technology, and also Swanee University of Technology, but not as a department, only looking at those two. So there are identified professions wherein we are of the view that if we have then that partnership that could yield the targets for the department, as it's currently not so easy to attract second particular skill. And also the last one that I indicated, that the leadership on computer for leadership program, and once they qualified, become contract, but as and when their security posts become vacant, we absorb them from contract positions to permanent positions. The budget of the department in 2014-15 is 19.72 billion, and projected to include 22.81 billion in the last outer year, and the average growth is 4.6%. As I've indicated, that what we had there to do is to, within our baseline, to fund certain spending policy priorities, and for the particular MTF, what we then were able to set aside for those spending new priorities is an amount of 72.615, increasing to 77.9 in the outer year. And we did that by identifying certain non-core items under goods and services, and reprioritizing those funds across the programs to fund the rollout of electronic monitoring, because we had done a pilot program. So the rollout, we were able to get aside 28.2 million, increasing to 28.7 in the entire year. And then for the digital security equipment, we set aside 22.6 million, increasing to 25 million. Implementation of victim offense dialogues, which is part of social intervention and the whole issue of restorative justice, 4 million, increasing to 4.4 million, and replacement of dilapidated workshop and cultural machinery and equipment. This one continuing, because we had started already in the previous financial year to move within our business and fund this critical area, because having submitted MTSDs to National Treasury and those are being funded, and we had to come to a decision as a department that rather than to wait for an extra additional funds, let them begin to pay for non-core items and fund critical aspects. So already in the default investment to fund this area, and are continuing on the MTF, because for us, the person, there is a critical effect. If you leave workshop and agricultural machinery and equipment to deteriorate, then it means you need to increase funding for buying out instead of self-production of certain of these items that we are currently producing. So that's why we need to take that critical decision in the department to actually continue with that. So it's not at the pace and the rate that we'd like if we had our own way driven all workshops within AO2 and same agricultural equipment, but that's what currently we can afford from rearranging our own available resources within the department. We then are indicating from the baseline currently of 18.7 billion, moving to 19 billion, increasing to 22 billion in the outer year. Of those allocations, amounts that are recent, which amount to 1.6 billion, increasing to 1.968 billion in the last outer year. And the relevant funding for accommodation charges that you pay to the Department of Public Works for all facilities we occupy as department, we then charge for occupying those government buildings would be it, our functional facilities, it offices. We need to indicate them before the phase start to be occupying for them to put in the trading entity for maintenance purposes. The leases, these ones are external leases that we have for offices and also municipal services, repair and maintenance for our own facilities mainly. They were looking at the repairs and maintenance that is set aside for our own offices. The capital program, which is the major rehabilitation of centers, is indicated it increases to 635 million in the last outer year. I must just indicate that one cost pressure currently is the municipal services, that also is one area where the inflator is not as municipalities have. So what we have in the Zealand is inflator for municipal charges, and what in the municipalities then increase every July. The two don't talk, and therefore always have to absorb that in our own baseline as a department. That is one area that we've registered with National Treasury, but municipalities as well, we charge different inflators for especially electricity. We then indicate allocation for this MTF per program, as we indicated the increases per program over the MTF using the 2014 as a base. So what maybe one should explain is under administration and incarceration. If you see the -3% the administration allocation, if you compare the 2014 as a base to 2014-15 financial year, we had to, in engaging with National Treasury, rearrange the property management allocation, the one for property payments to DPW. Initially, as per Treasury Directive, that was a sub-program under Program 1, which includes the property services to correctional facilities. So in the last financial year, MTF processes for 14 MTF, then the agreement was that then any property payments that relates to correctional facilities will then move from that sub-program to under facilities in Program 2, which is incarceration. That's why you then see incarceration increasing by 7% and going down in the other 2 years, and administration decreasing by 3% and stabilizing in the other 2 years. Basically, it's because in the 2015 we've done that rearrangement as the Treasury does too as well. We then indicate in a bar chart the different allocations per program and the actual program, as cases in the incarceration program takes quite a big chunk of the allocations as a total. If you then go to per program, the analysis, DCS overall is a labor intensive department, so in all these programs you see that more goes to compensation of employees rather than to the other main two items, which is the business services and capital. So in program 1, 72% goes to the compensation of employees and 23% to business services, and the largest programs there is program corporate services and management, and we set aside under corporate services 1% of the salary bill that will go for training as per the Skills Development Act, which amounts for us to 131.6 million that then is exclusively set for training of officials, including the aspects of leadership as we indicated before. And it is spending on sub-program management as one of the large sub-programs and the program administration, as I indicated. It also houses the activity for information technology, and the main interest there is on our investment over the medium term to improving and upgrading our ICT infrastructure. And if one then refers to our previous E&E as well, there has been some constant injection even in the last MTF on this particular area. The decrease in spending on office accommodation, as indicated earlier, is according with the property payments that have moved to program incarceration. Internal audit sub-program increased as well, so that we can be able to provide more capacity to internal audit units within the department. And the program incarceration, 59% goes to the salary bill, and then 24% mainly to government services. The growth there in facilities, as indicated, we are planning to add new bed spaces amounting to 4,348.
our projection is that if we do so, the projected overcrowding will be 27%. Of course, we fully are aware that there are other factors that contribute to the level of overcrowding in the department, which are not necessarily the expectors, but which are also factors within the GCPS system. And on equalizers and measure and equipment, there is a significant increase of 16% to 62%. And really, it is due to the increase in the provision for day-to-day maintenance. And I must indicate that on this aspect, we've got internal allocated funds for maintenance, and there's the one that is sitting in the property management trading entity in the DPW that we contribute to. So we partake in both funds, which is the one allocated to DCS Motor, and also the one that is sitting under DPW. And as you indicated earlier, that we also increasing in allocation for procurement security equipment. Under program rehabilitation, 71% goes to accommodation of employees and 25% to goods and services. The expenditure on goods and services, if one looks at the increase over these two MTS, or it's for purchasing professional materials and the transportation costs on that one, introduction and workshops has indicated that we had started already in the last financial year to inject more investment in replacement of dilapidated workshop and agricultural equipment. And over the MTS, this program will also be focusing on providing offenders with opportunities for personal development. One of the areas that the former minister indicated under rehabilitation was compulsory education for offenders who do not have the basic education qualification, which is supposed to in terms of the constitution grade 9 or 8 level 4. And the program care, 62% is focused on services, and mainly looking at the largest sub-program is the nutritional services, and the second largest is the health services, and all of these among the proposed center defenders and remand detainees that are incarcerated in our facilities. And it's one of the sub-programs, the nutritional services, and the very smallest in health services, that are always hard hit with the inflation adjustment that more or less every year we need the hope to check how we then streamline certain activities to be able to absorb the food inflation and the prevailing in any particular expansion. And again, as indicated, this is about preventing, but we're focusing on the health care, to deal with the issue of HIV/AIDS, to deal with the issue of TB and sexually transmitted infections, and to promote hygiene services. But with hygiene services, is another item that sub-program or program care. And the social reintegration, 84% goes towards compensation salaries, and about 2.2% goes to the services. And we have set aside for this MTF 28.2% for the electronic monitoring, which is the rollout, which is starting this month. And as indicated in the previous slide, that over the MTF will continue then to set those amounts aside. And also, as indicated before, the victim offender dialogue is set aside that those should continue. And our ADP, I think, sets about 8. Which is now not necessarily limited to that number, but I think we're focusing on 8 November dialogue sessions that should be held, and those held in conjunction with communities and the social services and the psychologists. And our focus over the NTS to ensure that we've got effective supervision of the services and the system of community corrections, and also to ensure that we continue to facilitate the reintegration of the industry into the respective societies. We then are indicating for the committee the breakdown of the budget for the NTS and economic classification as indicated. Our personnel budget, which is the committee, is the biggest chunk of the department due to ourselves being labor intensive, followed by the services item for the operations and the authorities. Transfers and subsidies in our department is not much. Basically, our transfers and subsidies we provide for the transfer to make to the successor, as per law, and the normal transfer to households when our own officials exit the system, which is their exit strategies, and the last item for us
actually partaking in labor opportunities, then there is a small motion that we're looking at one issue that we've targeted in the department to over every MS increase with that effective special of this April reviewed the gratuity that we're giving them and also their level to be reviewed that we try to have an increase in major jump this year, but we are still planning that in the future NTS within the allocated resources that we should also try to increase that even more. Of course, for the salary, I want to always say that it is gratuity, but it is as college to what we have in previous NTS, we felt like we need to ensure that we make a significant increase and be able to sustain that over the NTS. We then indicate as can be seen that the compensation as compared to the other items is quite huge. Some of the services around that is then transfers are almost negligible in the cases that we can't be properly seen, and these for case claims is a second one. And mainly payments for capital access is our program that takes the largest chunk. With regards to the economic classification, I won't repeat what is indicated there on personnel, basically that we've got that establishment of 42,000 and also the interventions that have indicated to try and improve our vacancy levels. When it comes to goods and services, the bulk of the expenditure goes to the property payments and accommodation charges that are paid to the Department of Public Works and physical infrastructure that indicated that the largest aspects they also have got to do with amounts set aside for the capital program, which we pay back to others for residential centers and construction centers, and the second largest item being the day-to-day maintenance, which is now the DCS Foundation, not the one that is the property management trade entity under DPW. Within Chapter indicates to mirrors the allocation per sub program over the 3 years with 13 to 14 years of age and their economic classification, which I'm not going to necessarily go into detail. And then we then indicate the allocations on slide 29 per region. As a department, we've got 6 regions. So it's headed to like 6 regions, which is housing, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, Northwest, and Southeast, Northern Cape, those 2 provinces. The second case is our region, and Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and Northwest, our region, in our case, the department. That means the 6 regions. So we are indicating to the committee for the immediate reporting system how the resources are being allocated. But normally, if one is at allocation services, it does raise an eyebrow to say, as head of it, why would we have comparatively look at all regions as a large chunk. Basically, it's because of the centralized allocations that are not centralized to the regions, which is the staff accommodation, the triple T payments, plus the tracking payments, so that centralized at the head of this, that is why you see that huge chunk there. So we have about 4 million centralized amount. The rest is head of this operation, and then we indicate for the community pay program, pay economic classification, how much each region guys has been planned to enforce this current financial year. I would then end the chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you. Controls. Let's look at where there are gaps so we can help fill advice that we can give on the improvement. What is there? I will take the hand now. Honorable Sir, the Honorable myself. Honorable Tabalala, Honorable Majake, if you could just note the questions and then you can answer proceed.
Thank you, Chair, and Chair, thank you for the presentation. We appreciate the financial constraints that the department is working under. However, one does need to look at the legacy report that was filed in March by the previous portfolio committee and the concerns that were expressed about the internal audit. And at that time, reporting the committee said that the internal audit was still under-resourced and largely managed by an external service provider. And then in February, one presumes you were the acting CFO, you confirmed that the internal audit capacity did not meet minimum standards. Now, clearly that is a matter of concern, and I'd like to find out from you what the status is of the internal audit committee and to what degree can we see an improvement of the Auditor General's report where we see qualified audits for the last while. Is there, I know that we don't necessarily have the new one, but what steps have been taken to address the concerns that led to the qualified audit over the past? It's just noteworthy that the committee states in that report that an urgent intervention was required to ensure that combined efforts to create a correctional environment built on good governance, accountability and a shared commitment to rehabilitating offenders is necessary. So I think Chair Walker doesn't want to dwell on the past. One needs to learn what that committee said in March of this year. But my particular focus is on proper risk assessment processes, whether they are in place to prevent negative auditor general outcomes, and that obviously revolves around the status of the internal audit committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. When I last checked, I knew that the department was involved in a pilot project on electronic monitoring. You, in your report, you refer to the rollout, and you've made provision over the entire MTEF period for payments and to a contractor. I wasn't aware that a contract had been awarded. Can you shed some light on when that happened and to whom that contract was awarded? And secondly, I see that under the Program 2 incarceration, right at the end you say increased provision of $22.6 million was made for the purchasing of security equipment in 2014-15. Can you shed some light on what that security equipment is? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think for me the amount of money spent on rehabilitation vis-à-vis the total budget is still a far cry from what it should be. Because I think the objective is DCS is not just incarceration, it's incarceration with an aim of rehabilitation so that there is no repeat offender. But that ties also in on page 10 with the amount that is spent on victim offender dialogues, what would be called restorative justice. I think it indicates for me that rehabilitation is still a focus. And I think, frankly speaking, if they're open and honest, they will tell us that under the current situation of overcrowding, it is immensely difficult to carry out rehabilitation. So I'm not sure if it's then listed as an objective that should be funded and therefore evaluated in terms of a funded objective. If we are making any headway, so to say, it's not overcrowding the issue. And the people responsible for rehabilitation, you know, psychologists or social workers or criminologists, would be the first people to tell you that under the conditions, it's immensely difficult to carry out rehabilitation.
Thank you, Chair. You previously had a qualified audit report, and I just want to know if you really are related to emphasis of NETRA in terms of the previous financial report. And in the 2013-2014 initial year, by the end of the fourth quarter, you had already overspent on care program. Are there any measures that are actually being put in place to ensure that sexual occurrence does not happen again? I actually got a little bit worried also when I look at your classic EME overview over years. You know, it's like the figures are just rocketing. And remember, there is no money that comes in. It's money that's supposed to, there's no profits, that's what I'm saying. It's money that's supposed to come from a government into the department. And then sometimes you find that there will be some of the programs like expenditure, like capital expenditure, wouldn't that actually make the graph not to keep on locating, because your graph is actually locating, and that's why one of the things that I'm looking at is the money that you pay to habitat in terms of accommodation and property. Is there no other way to actually making it differently? You need to have your own buildings. It can be a long-term program, but you need to actually have a way of keeping this. Whose buildings are these? Do they belong to us? Is this money coming back to us? That's what I would like to know. And I'm interested to understand also what amount of money just goes to employees. And then you've actually indicated that something like the 7% of the contract, of the employees' own contract, like 85% payment, something like that. But and maybe it's something that cannot be done today. But in future, when you report, we need to understand as to, in terms of the payment for employees, as to where most of the money goes to. And that would actually help us to understand the structure and as to whether your kind of structure is the one that actually is up too much money. Because when you look at, for example, incarceration, the amount of money that goes to employees is 65%, rehabilitation 71%, care is 62%, rehabilitation 82%, so most of the money just goes to employees, much more than programs that I actually run. And I think we need to actually also have money that actually just gets into programs to avoid recidivism. Thank you, Chief.
I just want to ask a question. There are many farms that are state-owned and dilapidated buildings that are state-owned. And there's a huge demand for agricultural products by hospitals, schools, shopping. It is not possible that the department could see itself as a business. The people that you train in agriculture, you then take state funds, register them as cooperatives. When they are released, put them there on the farms, produce food, and then you supply hospitals and schools and malls and make money that you can use to address some of these shortfalls. And to follow up on the question of can't you have your own business? These municipalities and provinces, they own buildings, they don't know what to use these buildings for. Can't you take over some of those buildings and then renovate them and then get them to charge you rental for the next 20, 30 years because they didn't know what to use this thing for? I think that it may be necessary to start thinking that direction. For instance, you want to establish halfway houses, and there's a great need for these halfway houses and rehabilitation centers, but you don't have buildings of your own. So these dilapidated buildings could be made available for that, and then that would not cost you anything except, renovation. You could even get the renovation done at the expense of public works and so on. I think let's really try to find other ways, because if we are going to rely on the budget all the time, it's going to be very, very difficult. So I'm just raising that for your consideration. Thank you. Are we saying we're done? Which is a compliment to you. You are very good, and everybody is happy. So, and they can go home on time and then come back on time tomorrow. Hello?
Yes, to respond to that.
I thought you were saying that we are here. I thought those were just comments.
forward on issues that I might leave behind. On the issue that you are sort of referring to, with respect to the legacy report on internal audit cities, correct me, we internally in terms of the GDS capacity, we do have challenges. Is one issue that we have started to engage on in terms of looking at how we increase the internal capacity of internal audit. Currently, we have a contract with a consortium, but we're looking at diverting those resources and creating internal capacity. So there are engagements between within the department, between internal audit, human resources and finance in that regard, and what we then presented as a department to the internal adjudication committee is that the current contract go for the next 6 months, and that we cannot really advertise the term, but we then look at the engineering, the whole component. So that is still underway. So hopefully, when that process is finalized, the issue will then be how we then attract and retain those skills within the department. I think that's one critical aspect. Well and good to have this structure, but especially for internal auditors. But if we just want to advertise the post, we fill them, and then the next 2-3 months they are gone, we can go into a particular cycle. But in our discussion with internal audit, what we then agreed is that there may be a need for specialist services that will not want to completely take the whole allocation to compensation, but a small portion should be left where we need specialist services, for example, information technology audit services, which we do not have capacity, and within the audit firm element, certainly is one of the skills that for those special services we need a provision. And also, another service that we said we will continually need from internal audit is a review process, not only once a year, but what one said is that probably on a quarterly basis, that we're targeting that it should be done monthly, where our own internal audit component is able to look at our quarterly financial statements, quality check those, give back reports, do some compliance audit, and so that we're able to not hear from auditor general weaknesses within the department, but that we're able to hear them more tenacely and be able to put interventions and corrective measures more tenacely. So that's one aspect that we said maybe for startup, whilst they're building the capacity, that is one of the resources that we would co-opt from outside. We had already started that for the funding that has just ended. We'll be engaging in the institution of protective partner to do some first phase and quality review. And we also have engaged auditor general themselves that will request them as well to assist in terms of that particular service. Of course, we know that you have to pay them for that particular service. The issue of risk management, yes, we fully agree there has been a gap, and is one area that we have started to address, but in the past financially there won't be visible results when our annual report is presented to Parliament. But already the minor thing that the chairperson, which is an outside member, for the first time with a chairperson from outside had an invasion scheme, is quite good up in terms of risk management process, and he's going to be assisting us, and we had engagement also with the auditor general in that regard, and also the name of the person himself, and is to announce that it is an auditor general is from the work that he's already done in other government departments. He's done steady job. So we're hopeful that within the financial year we should be able to make some inroads in improving our risk management aspect, which we fully agree, especially in the last financial year. So there wasn't much. The only thing that we're able to do was strategic risk assessment, but it's a process that should be monitored throughout the year, and we must admit that the capacity that committed and our strategy when we had interactions with the chairperson that has been appointed is to not centralize the national office, to cascade down and build the capacity at the lower levels, which is the regional level, and also the management level. Because sometimes it's so used to sit with it only ahead of it and only have one national committee when the mitigation should be happening at the lower level. So it is one area that we had to look at. And Yes, the audit qualifications in the past, which is the latest report, is the 2013 financial year, has been a qualified opinion on assets, movable, not all categories of assets, is a movable tangible assets, and the different specific one does comparative analysis year on year. We have put a number of processes, including improving our policy frameworks and all of that, and Auditor General does a quarterly assessment of it, and they do provide the feedback and the meetings between the accounting officer, CFO, and the Auditor General to discuss the dashboard analysis that they do on a quarterly basis. And they, in those reports, at the policy level, document the control level, they have consistently rated us in the past financial year. This is all okay. But it's at the implementation of those documented controls that were challenging. So currently, in terms of the rating age on quarterly basis for 2014, all the four quarters, it has been here, which means this area where we still need to improve. During December, January, December 2013, January 2014, all managers in the department were deployed to all centers, in fact, to all facilities of the department, which is offices, correctional facilities, community correctional offices. All of us went to all those facilities to emphasize that every correctional center who starts the county to count each and every asset to check the documentation in terms of the asset register and also to look at the condition of these assets where they must dispose to actually dispose them, because that was an area, in, especially in the 2013 report that H picked up, that conditions of our assets is not okay. Of course, there's two sides to it. Other assets, we repair ourselves. So therefore, because your workshop cannot cope that capacity, there's delays in maintenance. But not that they are not due for maintenance, we don't dispose those. But others typically they should be and they must dispose. So we had that drive and that there's such a number of assets that we then dispose during the period when we had to call it Operation Fugosa during December, January, where indeed those assets either we can't donate them because of the assets also donate all the assets that we no longer are finding useful to schools, nearby communities, and including computers. Some assets were starting with them for the skills development of offenders, because they disintegrate the builder fresh. Some cars just don't dispose to us, then they send us training models to our own offenders. But we have then to explain that process to AG, that for us, we may keep some assets for developmental purposes, but those are probably we have to check differently. So that when auditors go to send us, they just say an asset was lapidated and file a negative report to the department, but then that they send their management to us to AG to explain that this set is specifically for whether computers for training of offenders. So we hopefully that then those interventions would be positive results in the 2013-14 outcomes. And our view as management has been that that strategy we want to sustain on different areas. So this one asset being the first door that we want to do, and also in our blended plan that audit outcomes would be for unqualified with the reduction in our group of matter, and I think the last outer year of our ETP, we say no qualification, no emphasis matter, but with the reduction now to significant items that AG would put in, would engage to the department. But what we have requested from AG in our interaction as well is on certain aspects, a more proactive kind of view at which they said to do a master plan. We had requested them because the treasurer has indicated that the modification on reporting and expressing of opinion by AG on inventory is going to start in 2017. Now, if you look at the inventory complexity in the Department of Correctional Services, sitting here, if we do the special intervention, that will get, in my honest opinion, a disclaimer on inventory. So we then engaged Auditor General to say, given that in 2017 there's a projection that you would be expressing an opinion, now we're not expressing an opinion because it's assuming the financial statement, and we start auditing our inventory so we're able then to improve our loans. And we then engaged the National Treasury because there's serious challenges with the current system, which locks on inventory management and the complexity of inventory. Because in our case, it's not just about inventory that we propose, it's inventory that we manufacture ourselves, and the current system does big environments like DCS, you then found a lot of human errors when you're actually acting. So it's one thing that we started as national treasurer, we need a serious modification for the whole IFM has been told that we should not think on it. It's no longer in the horizon. I think it's just no longer on the table. So that those are the aspects that we take. And they started last year looking at the industry, and then they continue this year, but it comes with a value add. We were saying, we know not expressing an opinion, but wanted to see what weaknesses are there and what recommendations can come up from AG to be able to improve ourselves. And so that when then, if it to rectify issues of our own control, our own framework, we do so. And my view is that let's be left only with the same issues that is beyond and accounting of self-control, which is only external matter. So that's what we targeting. The EM question, order of serve, the panel was awarded on the 21st of May, the financial year, and it was awarded to EFF, is Engineered System Solutions Pty Ltd. That's the name of the company that has been awarded the tender, and the tender is for a period of 5 years, beginning 2014. July, I think it's effective after July, it's the contract, and yes, the contract was signed on 21st of May. With regard to the increased provision for procurement of security equipment, within that allocation we had specified amounts for replenishing our through arms corps. And the other aspect, which is the body scanning equipment, we've already gone up on open tender for that one, and I think the current process is on the legal services component for them to legally do so before it goes to the adjudication committee. That's the status of the particular tender. And of course, we fully are, if you look at the amount itself, it's not that much, but it's one area that we felt like we don't need to reprioritize if we can get extra additional funds to be able to make some intervention. And the allocation of rehabilitation, this is the total allocation. Yes, indeed, if one looks at the different programs, five programs, the one program that is the biggest chunk of our allocation is program security, the program, the sub-program security, but under program incarceration. And not that as a department is saying maybe rehabilitation is of lesser importance, but we can at the same time rearrange the security one just straightforward and put to rehabilitation. But what must be noted is that when it comes to the rehabilitation program, the department has partnered also with external NGOs, and that gets reflected in our budgetary documents. We have a department in the past quality checked or quality assured the program of those NGOs. We have a database of these NGOs that are offering programs across the country, and currently in our database across the country, I think there's about 25 NGOs that are there that constantly offer those professional programs as part of rehabilitation. Another aspect on family development, we don't get funding from the National Skills Fund for developing our offenders under the Department of Higher Education and Training, as well as we look at us tapping into the source of funds that doesn't get reflected into the E&E. For example, through NSF, in 2013, I think we trained about 5,300 offenders or so on various skills development, and in 2014, financially, there was about 5,200. So we constantly tap into that. We do have a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Higher Education in terms of access to the National Skills Development Fund. So those are some of the external sources that we tap into that contribute to the rehabilitation of the grant, but that doesn't get reflected because here we're talking what would come to the first parliament and we voted for what we do. We want also, we're not saying that comfortable with those partnerships, we will continue to strengthen that some area that we've recognized. And so in our planning studies that we do need to strengthen the strategic partnerships within country so that we're able to, as far as possible, increase that big sport. Other challenge when we talk to the NGOs is that those mostly are concentrated to big city sports that there is in Asia. And if you look at Stella, maybe we can't look at an NGO that would then concentrate even those smaller centers, most of the centers. So in one area that we still need to improve on it as a department. But again, if one looks at program rehabilitation, it's a labor intensive and spiritual care services. If one area spiritual care services, which is not only Christian based, it is all religion, that partner with many organizations in all our facilities in the country. And again, those services that are provided by those organizations, we don't cost them and then say spiritual services from external organizations, be it NGO for spiritual services, it is so much because you're talking here, it's voted. But in one area, spiritual services, that is more, it is there, even the rural component, is better spread than the other traditional programs. And on the issue of the OD allocation, yes, 4 million, but if one looks then at a little bit addition to transportation financially, that's where the Borough Service Department, we started looking at the whole issue of victim offender dialogue, not that they were not there before, but to refocus ourselves to say that even if they in our white paper, corrections and societal responsibility, let them ensure that we create that platform of preparing our offenders for reintegration by also involving the victims. It doesn't, in our view, mean that through the victim offender dialogue automatically then the victims will be there pardon you. And it is not a condition of parole, I think we want to clear that upfront. But we then saying these offenders at the end of the day go back to the community. But let's facilitate that process once they are inside our facilities, let them be able to apologize to their victims, be primary victims, be secondary victims, once they're still inside our facilities. And therefore this dialogue, you're not buying resources because we're using our social resources, so effectively it's not formulated to quantify how much extension would be if we do proper code accounting. So we're using our own psychology, we're using our own social workers. So basically this formula would be where probably you need to have venues, but sometimes you find that certain categories of offenders would have their victims in the whole community. And therefore, you might have not enough space, you have to maybe have an external venue. So basically, the formula will be catered on the classroom. But in terms of the actual facilitation processes, it's our own official. We do also partner with communities in that regard, and the communities would avail their own, the community leaders, the spiritual care services, people to facilitate that whole process, which again, we've got to respect that it's 4 million and all that, but it's more comprehensive than the whole program. We're not saying effectively that again there is no room that we can increase the scope, but if you look at our performance in the past financially, I think we even exceeded the number of sessions that we set up for the country will be heavy for victim of that dialogue. The issue of care programs overspending, basically it is under that sub program in treatment services. And as I've indicated that if one component, if you look at the food in status that you would have between your budgeted and also the amount you would realize in the year is that the two don't reach. You will have 5% for inflation adjustment, and then the food inflation would be 9%, 10%, varying on average 10%, and therefore you then have to find within, rearrange yourself to be able to absorb that adjustment. So is there any area that I think we'll grapple with and be able probably when the whole economic situation of the country improves, we'll have to go to national treasury and say we need some kind of election. Just to so effectively when you reorganize yourself to absorb that, you take it from somewhere. So effectively then decreasing certain amounts that we allocate to projects might not last in 5 years because we've got to. These are contractual attention, be it those that we buy or be it the outsourced services. So I cannot sit here and be chairperson and say it shall never happen, so long as the current position prevails. It's one of the first questions that we have, and we need to find ourselves in. We tried this year also to adjust a little bit to be able to cater for that. The property payments issue. The whole setup of property management is that which is not only within DCS, but to all government departments. All government agencies belong to the Department of Public Works. Whether those are state owned, like our own personal facilities, they don't belong to DCS. So our own personal facilities, 272 of them, belong to the Department of Public Works. So for all facilities, we then pay the government some kind of rent for occupying those facilities. The intention when the whole issue was presented, I think it was 2006, was that money would go to an entity within public works, and that money would be utilized to renovate, to maintain those facilities. But I think the challenges then have been posing the issues PPMTE was that you don't see that happening. You don't see us gain much from maintenance from the property management entity, whilst we are pressing fence, whilst we must on a monthly basis take CW rent for occupying government buildings. So it's a live across departments. It doesn't matter whether it's a correctional center, whether it's an office building that is owned by government, so long as you're occupying a government building, you must pay DPW. And in return, that was the goal. In return, DPW are supposed to maintain these buildings to ensure that constantly government buildings are well maintained. That's something that there is then a distinction between how much you take from that pool and how much then you still physically as money that is going towards maintenance. But it's a policy now that all government departments pay the particular. So we don't have, unfortunately, any way to decrease that funding. I'm not sure that it's enough. I'll take your comment as a comment that we've noted, and not necessarily as a question, the one of how we use the state or the central effective.
You know where? Your good response convinces me that maybe when we go forward, indeed we must learn from the past, but maybe just to inform a turnaround strategy. And I think you had a good story today. And that good story could be used to say, when we go forward, we must really be talking about a turnaround strategy that you are presenting, other than lamenting about the past, because I can see that you have mastered the whole area. We can go forward, and I would reward the deputy by allowing him to give some concluding remarks, rewarding for his good credit.
Jefferson, thank you very much. I think for us, at the end, is to appreciate the opportunity for addressing members of the committee. I can assure members that all of their concerns and questions and comments have been recorded, and that as a department, we shall definitely, as part of our forward-moving progress, attend to them, and in our next engagement we shall then indicate what is it that we have put in place to ensure that all of these comments and questions were not just made but were taken into consideration. It is important, however, Chair, to emphasize the fact that one appreciates the contributions of members that are new in the committee. It would have been assisting if we had firstly presented to them the strategic plan of correctional services, thereafter the annual performance plan and the operational plan, that we have given them a better understanding of what is it that we want to achieve and at which time frames. I think we will definitely, because we have to redo our strategic plan to provide to members as well that document, so that when you critique the department, you also take into consideration the strat plan, the ops plan, and the annual performance plan. However, as I've said, we're taking all comments very serious, and we shall attend to them. Just to make a comment on two. One of them is the trading entity that the chairperson is referring to. A lot of significant work was done by the previous commissioner, Mr. Tom Moyan, with regard to that, and with the assistance of Treasury. It is for me then incumbent that I need to go back and find out how far that did go and what were the bottlenecks that prevented it to be implemented, because it's exactly what the chairperson is saying at the end, that to utilize these offenders to start up something that once they go outside they can then be able to have a starter fund or even have their own cooperatives. I think the work that was done, that I know, chairperson, I will have to go back and establish where that ended and why it was not done to the end. And then maybe to also indicate to members that we do have challenges in the department, challenges of not having enough hands and feet to do our work, challenges of corruption. At our community corrections, it is a fact, members of parliament, that we do not have the strength that we would have liked to have in our mind, because it is a branch that has been started recently. However, in our bid that has been submitted, we have also touched on case management committee, we have touched on COMCO, community corrections, and on remand, so that as we get allocation, we then able to fill up the staff needs that we have in those components. I think we can safely assure the committee that as we move on, we also have planned that in the medium-term expenditure framework, that we indicate how many officials we would need, because even at correctional center level, we have those needs. What we will be doing as a matter of agency with the CDCHR is to conclude the task that was given to us by the then minister with regard to those areas that were concerned, one of them being shift pattern and as well as the OSD. So, Chairperson, with that, we'd like to say we thank you very much, and we look forward to coming again to the committee and providing some of the answers that we were not able to provide today. But we look forward to this collaboration and direction that we're getting from the portfolio committee members. It is indeed our commitment to ensure that whatever we do in the department, we derive strength from humanity, Ubuntu, relevant.
Conclude by saying that statistics say that 70% of our population is 35 and below, and the majority of this youthful population is in correctional centers, which means that if we cannot develop those people, the country will have a serious problem. And therefore, I want to support the position that Minister Derebe took when he said that correctional centers must be centers of excellence. The people there must be skilled, they must be rehabilitated, but more important, when they come out, they must not go into the vacuum, because otherwise they will go back, there will be a recycling of these people, which will not be in the interest of the country. So I think that we should make this issue a societal matter, and we should really join forces, all of us, to make sure that those young people in prison are our responsibility and make out of them productive citizens. But I think the reports that we got today are very encouraging, and I have no doubt that if we take into account the comments by the MPs and their suggestions, we could have a turnaround strategy in place and then take South Africa forward together. I thank you very much. Good voyage.
Thank you.